Scott Wells. I am the forage and cropping systems specialist for the University of Minnesota. I'm also an assistant professor in the Department of Agronomy and Plant Genetics.
Scott, let's start with what the winter conditions across much of the upper Midwest have done to the alfalfa crop, in your opinion, as far as the amount of snow cover. And we had some very frigid temperatures the latter part of December, the first part of January. How do you think that that crop is holding up as we are not quite halfway through winter?
You know, that is the million-dollar question that we get asked every single year. And sometimes even in February, it's hard to even predict how well the stands will hold up because it's very situational. It has been colder, and we have had some snow, so we know that if we can keep 3 to 4 inches of snow out there, we should be able to insulate those crowns. I guess what I'm more concerned about is as we progress, you know, we've had some warmer temperatures, we've had some thaw, and that, you know, that snow and water has to go somewhere, and as it refreezes, it's in those lower areas where we have that ice sheeting. And as we move in progress in January, February, and March, that's when we can really get in trouble. Like in some of my sites last year, where I was pulling soil samples February 22nd, so that means that top couple of inches of soil had actually thawed enough for me to get in there, and soil temperatures had reached 45 degrees Fahrenheit. So we were in a situation in that year where in some isolated spots on some of the older stands that we were breaking dormancy, and then it came really hard. We got ice sheeting and cold temperatures, and the combination of older stands that have been pushed hard for some research questions we're asking, we did have significant winter kill in those. So it's really tough to tell you, to predict, based on what we've had weather-wise, what we'll see across the state. Newer stands that were charged up real well, you got to let them go to at least 10% flower at least sometime during the growing season last year. And if they've been managed well with potassium and not really punished like some of our programs where we really push the alfalfa for high quality, high tonnage, and we get maybe 2 to 3 years lifespan on it. So what I've been telling people is, say, look, I can't answer the question, but what I can tell you is that there's a couple of tests that you could take that could help you maybe understand some of the underlying risk you may be associated with. Did you take those fall cuts? How old are your stands? What did your stands look like going into the winter? Those are some big ones. Are you on hilltops, low areas? Are you well drained? As we progress in the winter, are you seeing, water pooling and ice sheeting? Those are some big ones. And then we just have to keep a watch on our crown temperatures. If they, drop below, 5 degrees Celsius, we can get in real trouble. So, I know that's not the answer that anyone ever wants to hear, but it's kind of one of these things we just have to wait. Now, let's back up and say that we stay open. I know that I looked at the weather about 8 inches coming into the state. That's really going to help us out, providing some insulation to those crowns. But what if it was going to be open? No snow out there, and we had another 2 to 3 months of hard winter. I like to remind my growers, it's not just enough to kill the alfalfa, you can injure it, which makes the crowns more susceptible to disease and lower performance. If you lose those upper buds, you have to actually regrow, and you can actually see that in the spring where you get that real differential growth between, you'll see that, kind of the actual buds that survived the winter, and then you see all the new ones that have to grow out in the spring. So yeah, I can't really tell you at this moment that you're going to see winter kill or you're not going to see winter kill. Older stands, maybe you should be taking a look at those. And I think the more important question is asking, are you, with your older stands, meeting your forage needs? Are you counting your stems? Those kind of things. And if not, maybe it's time to rotate your alfalfa out, grab that free corn silage nitrogen credit, and then rotate back into alfalfa.
And that's kind of the direction that I wanted to go next, as far as the terminated alfalfa and other forage crops alternatives, what those growers need to consider if they're going to make a change like that.
Well, so first of all, if you're going to, my kind of philosophy is push alfalfa hard. Get everything, get those 3 years out of it, your seeding year, 2 to 3 production years and push it hard, get that nitrogen credit, rotate into corn silage, maybe take your first year and even your second year nitrogen credit. Dr. Jeffrey Coulter and Dr. Michael Russell of the USCA-ARS and in my own department did a lot of great work on showing those nitrogen credits. So that's kind of the thinking, backing up and looking at this from a large systems point of view. Take your 3 years of alfalfa, rotate into your first and second year of corn, and then whatever other rotation you want to get into, and then get back to alfalfa. Now, let's re-ask the question, and let's reframe it like we saw coming out in 2012, where we had a situation where the alfalfa was pushed hard. We ended up with winter injury and winter kill across Wisconsin and Minnesota. I think Dr. Understander stated close to 500,000 acres of alfalfa that was injured. Now, in that situation, a lot of that injury happened, you know, obviously it was stressed going into the winter, but we had these really heavy ice sheeting and rain events. That could have possibly happened, so maybe you wouldn't have enough time, or maybe you're in your second production year and you needed the alfalfa and you were going to take that stand. What we heard was people said, oh, my alfalfa greened up and then it died. In a situation like that, your hands are a little more, you're a little more limited. You could go with a shorter relative maturity silage crop, you know, maybe a 90-day, which is still not short. I mean, there's shorter varieties. Or you can maybe say, well, I need forage now. My stores are low. I can still get protein. I can make my ration balance. You can find protein on the market, but I need some forage now. What we worked on with that was to develop kind of a kit, which was really planting summer annuals directly into either winter terminated alfalfa or winter ended alfalfa, and no tilling in. We did a whole bunch of grasses, looked at some millets, teff, some sorghum sedans, and in that program what we found was, because you had lost it, really was in more of an economic decision, because you now have maybe your alfalfa crop is not performing as well as you'd like, or as well, not as well as you like, maybe the well as you need for your margins, well, then we wanted to minimize how much extra cost it would be to create that forage. And so one of the big winners in that one was annual ryegrass. You could go in there and plant that. It's producing high-quality forage and can be harvested in 30 days. You can harvest it about a 20-day interval. We were able to get at least 3 harvests. You could probably even take it up into a 4th harvest in a year. Now, it's not an alfalfa replacement, but it's providing you some stopgap forage immediately. That's a relatively relative forage quality. So that's one aspect. Another way of thinking about this, some of the southeastern dairy producers kind of brought this to my attention. They were pushing their alfalfa hard to get high quality. And in the third year, the third production year, they noticed the alfalfa wasn't standing up well. It was, the persistence was really taking a beating. You know, driving on those crowns, putting manure applications out there, really hammering it. And so what some of them were making the decision to do was to go ahead and rotate out into a, in that third year, if they didn't have the stand quality they needed, the stems, which is making your forage needs, they were rotating out to forage habit pea and a forage habit barley or triticale, and coming in there and they were and producing relatively high quality forage, decent tonnage for that first cut, and then they were coming in June and replanting either some of the larger grasses like sorghum sedan or coming in with short season silage crops. And we tested this, and it actually works most years in a silage production system. It's a little tougher if you're going to think about trying to double crop with a grain crop with it. So that gives a couple of options there. One of the things that I have been kind of warning farmers that I always get the call, well, my stands look rough. I want to keep my alfalfa in business. Why can't I just go out there and no-till alfalfa right on top of it? And these would be, you know, second and third production years and even older. The issue with that is, and I'm sure probably well aware of it, is this idea of autotoxicity. Now, you'll hear farmers say, hey, I did it and it worked. And there's research showing that it can work, but there is a risk of those stands not performing as well as a fresh planting. And so at that point, I'm suggesting if you don't have the stems to make your forage needs, think about some of your annual grasses. If you want to keep a legume in it, maybe no-till in some of your, there's some, a couple clovers that could work there. Red clover would fit well into the system, would buy you some time until you could rotate out, get to the silage corn, or rotate into some other crop. I'm not just suggesting you always have to go to silage corn. You may have a different crop there that works with your production systems. But what we do not want people doing is coming in on a three-year-old stand and taking their drill out there and planting more alfalfa. That's just not a good use of time or energy.
Boy, Scott, and you hit on it a couple of times, the options that are out there. And when you hear about, you know, the cover crop options, as farmers start to come up with these various cocktails, if you will, these combinations, as research continues, it's really exciting to think about when you find those right combinations, the benefits, especially as a forage need on the farm.
I've only looked at a couple of those. It's kind of interesting. You know, we're doing all this cover crop work as well, and I think most people forgot that almost all of those cover crops were forages long before they were ever considered cover crops. Most of them have relatively high forage quality. Obviously, some of your larger grasses, your winter annuals, the quality is going to decline with most plants as they grow, but some of those winter annual grains can really pump out some biomass. So as far as like looking at an entire forage quality workup across a lot of cover crops, I've only been limited to a couple of the grains and a couple of the legumes. Now, there is a researcher, Dr. Eric Mosel in animal science at the U, who's actually been looking at feed quality across a whole range of cover crops and calculating all the economics, largely for cow-calf and dairy cow-calf and beef operations. And yeah, I've seen his lectures, some really nice data in there. If you haven't connected with him, he'd be a great person to talk to kind of, I don't know if you're only targeting for dairy or not, but he could really well round that out. Because they're looking at gleaning some of these cornfields, looking at a whole range of cover crops for the beef industry.
And I did want to come back to the no-tilling, drilling in alfalfa into the existing stands and some of those concerns that you brought up in what actually can happen. You said that there are times where it can be effective, but you do not recommend it. I mean, can you go into more detail?
No. Let me back. Okay, so what we're talking about, autotoxicity, is really a phenomenon. And you can find literature that goes both ways with it. Let's say that you're in your first seeding year. And, you know, we had, I don't know, it was two springs ago, we had a wet spring. Maybe you weren't running Roundup Ready technology, and you got your first seeding out there, and you got to wait your 60 days before you get it, you know, 50 to 60 days before you cut. And the herbicides, we had trouble with getting some of those out timely, so you may have more weeds in your field than what you're more accustomed to. And in some cases where farmers weren't able to get timely application of herbicides on those alfalfas during the establishment, they lost those alfalfa stands. And so the question came in, well, do we have to worry about autotoxicity on seedling or establishment year alfalfa? And after discussing with Dr. Craig Schaefer and a few others in the program, we come to the conclusion that overall in the first seeding year, you still have options. We recommended people going back in and catching that later summer planting, letting them know they need 7 to 8 weeks to get contractile growth. And you may have to have some water for the later summer planting. So that wraps it up for the actual establishment year with autotoxicity. Now, in the production years, things is very different. The rule of thumb is to say, well, if I've lost my production year alfalfa to winter kill, or I have winter entry, meaning my stands are not meeting, my stems are not meeting my forage demand, there's always this urge to say, hey, why don't I just beef up those stands? First of all, the chances of getting any of these new alfalfa plants to survive is very, very low. Alfalfa is very competitive against itself. That's not even counting for the autotoxicity. When you do get plants to establish, they tend to be lower performing. They tend to be weaker. They tend to have lower persistence. Now, I did some testing with Dr. Roger Becker at the U there at St. Paul. We actually were trying to demonstrate autotoxicity, and we went in and did some, looked at incorporation of shoots, incorporation of roots. You know, we kind of segregated the alfalfa material back into the soil. And in those plots, Now, remember, we're seeding 13 pounds of seed per acre, and my plots are 500 square foot, all right? And I had to count every plant in that plot, and I counted 8 plants over 500 square foot. I could not get anything to establish in it, and it was largely due to ototoxicity. And it didn't matter if it was just roots incorporated, because that would be what it would be, look like if you had harvested haylage and you came back in and planted, so, or hay or haylage where you removed it. So it can happen. So if you put all this energy in there to go ahead and plant, pay for that seed, and you beefed up those stands and you weren't getting, you still were not meeting your production goals, well, that would be problematic. And so that's why we suggest, hey, let's rotate into a crop that doesn't have, or intercrop a grass or a legume that is not affected by ototoxicity, like some of the warm season grasses, cool warm season grasses, and then a couple of the different legumes that could work well in there. So that's why, it's really about risk management. And we don't want to make advise someone, say, hey, maybe it could work. And there are some reports where it has worked, but there's also a lot of reports where it hasn't worked. And so we tend to take a more conservative approach to it. And that's why we're recommending either full rotation out to another crop, or then trying to interseed some other non-alfalfa forages into your mix to buy you some time.
Yeah, I didn't realize that alfalfa was so competitive with itself too. So some of those other grasses, you don't need to worry about that as much.
What we've seen is, so I should give a caveat. When we did the research, we had to simulate alfalfa winter kill with Roundup and 2,4-D, and because I wasn't using Roundup Ready technology in that system, or the alfalfa that I had. Now, in some demonstration plots, so we know that the grasses work well if you have very few alfalfa plants out there, and you can maximize that. We have research published on that. I went back in and did some demonstration plots with Dr. Archer Becker there at the field school. And what we did was we just no-tilled directly on top of it. The no-till culture did a fair amount of damage. And these were in good stands of alfalfa. We were just tearing it for teaching purposes. And those grasses came in. Now, yes, they were behind any of our grasses that would have come in a more of a clean-tilled or a no-till, no alfalfa or dead alfalfa environment, for sure, because you're not competing for resources. But they did come in, and we were able to make 2 cuts on that one, and there would have been the alfalfa in there. So you still are not taking as hard of a crude protein hit as you would take with just running like annual ryegrass, which is pushing out maybe between 17 and 18% crude protein versus alfalfa. So it's nearly half that. So yes, we have been able to do it. The grasses can hold. They're very competitive. Now, I would not recommend going into your a good alfalfa stand and doing what we did. So typically you would do this in a stand where, we get the question, hey, I see yellow dandelions out there. Well, then maybe it's the time to start thinking about either doing some interseeding to beef up your stands with some other non-alfalfa crop, or rotating your crop out altogether. And the reason why I keep saying rotating that crop out altogether is because if we think about maintenance of alfalfa, even in our variety testing programs where we do everything as close to perfect as possible, we are balancing our soil, we're balancing our pHs, we're doing annual testing for P and K in the system because we don't have manure going back into our systems. And so we're really trying to show the genetic potential in a variety trial, which makes sense. So my suggestion is to say, look, as you have a legume in the soil, your soils are naturally, due to biological nitrogen fixation, your soils are naturally going to become more acidic. Why is that a problem? It's because there is that sweet spot, 6-9 or so, where the largest percentage of nutrients in the soil are available to the plant. They will precipitate out of solution and the plant can take them up. So, after 3 to 4 years, it's a good idea to go ahead and relime, balance your pH after your soils, and then, replant and start best on the best foot with the best stands possible through the seeding year. That way your stands hold up longer. It's more about thinking about persistence in the system than anything else. And that's, I think, planning over 3 to 4 years.
Well, Scott, you've given me a lot of great information. Anything else you want to make sure we touch on today?
No, I think that's, I'd say always keep a good eye on, any of your seedling diseases or your, I mean, your alfalfa diseases, like anything that would look, you got weird looking plants, yellow plants, you're showing some crown damage. I think it's always a good idea. I think it's this. When I pull farm, when I ask farmers in all the talks that I give every year, I always ask, how many of you are out there going out there and counting your alfalfa stems to make sure you're meeting your forage goals? And I feel like there's either a couple things happen. One, it's such an elementary question, and I'm insulting the people I'm asking the question to, and they're just being polite and not answering. Or two, they're actually not doing it. They're actually not assessing their stands. They're not looking at, you know, they're not looking to see if they have disease issues, or they're not paying attention. They're not going taking sweet nets out and looking for pest and looking at thresholds and things of that nature. So I don't really know either way. I just always put it out there. So I always say, you know, if you're going to run alfalfa, run it hard, but keep an eye on it and have a plan to be able to rotate that alfalfa into your next crop. And probably with the dairies, probably going to rotate in the corn silage, which makes the most sense with pairing the alfalfa for that nitrogen credit on it. Yeah. Always go to the UMN. We have UMN forages. You can just search that in your Google bar. There's a, we're always trying to update the website. But there's a lot of information there on establishment. There's some good information on poisonous plants. We get some calls about that every spring. Just a lot of good information there.